scores! Gilmore scores! With 103 left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk. Starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, happy Friday. Let's get things going on this Friday, March 21st. Happy spring, happy Friday, and welcome to this hour of the program from our Groundworks downtown studio. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Vix.
Hello, Patty. How we doing? You got a little energy, a little pep today.
It's all fake, let me tell you that much.
I'm going to need that. I'm going to need you to elevate me today.
How about that? Happy spring.
I didn't know that, which would make sense why my wife was texting my mom, happy spring.
La primavera está aquí. We're here for spring is here. Let's go. It actually feels like spring outside. Hopefully you're having a wonderful week as we start to wrap up this week on Flames Talk. Text line's open for you at 960-960. Would love to have you along for the conversation if you're listening live here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Later on this hour, Daily Flames Roundtable. But first, Vix, where does that one rank? And by that one, I mean Thursday night in New Jersey. Where does that one rank in terms of didn't see that coming? Because And by no means am I trying to take anything away from the Flames for what they did, but this is a team that is the lowest scoring group in the NHL, a team that has struggled mightily away from the Scotiabank Saddledome. They were facing a motivated former teammate in Jacob Markstrom who, you know, while fighting it, had only allowed one goal through 40 minutes of play. They had allowed a late goal in the second period that typically kind of serve as absolute daggers in a hockey game like that. And yet they come out with a four-goal outburst, including putting three past their former teammate Jacob Markstrom in the third period on the road against New Jersey on a night that just did not feel like it was going to be their night. And they come out with a purpose. They came out like they were shot out of a cannon. They definitely felt like there was an opportunity to put the Devils on their heels. They did just that. And eventually, with less than 5 minutes to go, like we all had on our bingo card, Daniil Miramanov's the guy who ties the game. And then an absolute laser shot from Jonathan Huberdeau exactly 60 seconds later, and the Flames win this game with an empty netter 5-3. That maybe isn't their biggest comeback of the season. If you want to compare it to the Vancouver game on night one, those would be the two. But in terms of the timing, that one feels a little bit more important. But here's what I do know. They put together their most important period of the season at Prudential Center in New Jersey, won the game in regulation, did not see it coming. It was not on my bingo card. How off the radar was that for you when the Flames came back to win that 1-5-3?
Well, when Kevin Ball tries to, the 6'6" Kevin Ball tries to high stick a puck out of the air late in the second period, Paul Cotter gets it, cuts to the net, wraps it around Dustin Wolf. I had two kind of thoughts. One was, that's curtains. That's an absolute backbreaker of a goal in the final 28 seconds of a period. You can't allow those. And then the other secondary thought was, how is this team going to score two goals to push this to extra time? It wasn't even about regulation. It was about, how can this team manage to salvage at least 1 point? How can they get this thing to basically a shootout is what I was kind of gunning for. How unexpected is this? Patty, the Flames have scored four in a period just twice this year.
Yeah.
Thursday night was the first time all year they've done it in a third period. So you want to talk how rare this is? 1 in 68. I'm not entirely sure what that percentage is, but it ain't great.
Well, and they have not won a lot of games when trailing after 40 minutes of play this year. New Jersey had not lost a game in regulation when leading after 40 minutes this year. And yet there the Flames are. I give them a lot of credit because that could have been very much a pack up the tent. Now, I would not have expected them to do that, wave the white flag, pack up the tent, go quietly into the night, whatever the term may be, because that's not who they are. That's not who they've been. So I think the fact that they stuck with it and still played hard and fought till the end, that's on brand. But the way that they took over that game and the way they took over that third period, that's what I didn't have on my bingo card. I didn't have New Jersey being perfectly content playing the passive member of this game for an entire 20 minutes. I didn't have a squeaker from outside the high danger area getting through Jacob Markstrom to make it 3-2. I didn't see Jacob kind of imploding the way that he did. And you cannot fault him for the Jonathan Huberdeau goal, because that was an absolute
thing of beauty.
That thing was perfect. But you know, and the Miramanov shot was from the flank, and he had a lot of heat behind it. But you know,
might have been off the angle a little bit.
He probably didn't need to charge at it the way that he did. But you know what? Like I didn't have any of it on my bingo card, and I give all the credit in the world to the Flames for coming out, making it known right from puck drop to start the third period that they felt like they were still in this. And then a lot of times in a game like that, when a snowball starts rolling and a team gets rewarded for it, you know, the Flames were chasing, the Flames were activating, they were being a little more aggressive than normal in the first 6 or 7 minutes, then they got rewarded for it, then they're back within one, then they can go back into their structure, but New Jersey didn't answer, and the Flames took full advantage. The Devils didn't answer the Flames getting back within one. They continued to just let the Flames come at them, and the Flames gradually built more and more and more momentum to the point that I was a little surprised that the goal to tie it didn't come earlier. I'm a little surprised that it took until the final 5 minutes for Miramanov to finally burst it a second time. So, you know, that can be taxing. You can see pushes that get sustained for 10 or 11 minutes and you only get the one, and then the other team finally finds their legs and pushes back, or the team that's been pushing loses their legs or gets a little frustrated. At no point did that happen. That's a full marks comeback win for the Flames. I was really impressed with what I saw on Thursday night.
Well, and the surprise factor is, as you mentioned, the byproduct of them being the lowest scoring team in the league. And honestly, it didn't register to me that they'd be able to get something done in regulation. I really thought that if they were going to get any points whatsoever, it was going to come in extra time. I know we'll talk about them in a minute, but there was one moment in that third period that would have put the game on its ear, and that was Mercer's shorthanded breakaway.
Yep.
And I know we'll talk Dustin Wolf in a moment, but that was an absolute tipping point in that period. 7:51 in, he makes that pad save on that clear-cut shorthanded breakaway.
If that
goes in, curtains.
And also, because it didn't go in, I kind of felt like
momentum.
You know what I... Labardius used to do this thing when he was doing the play-by-play for the Flames, and he used to do this in games like that. Third periods, close games, Flames trailing. He'd always say after a Mika Kiprusoff big stop, Lou would say, file that one away. Right?
Yep.
And so as I was watching that goal or that breakaway from Mercer, the shorthanded break, and Dustin Wolf makes that stop, the first thing I heard in the back of my head was Lou saying, file that one away for later. And I thought instantly to myself, I'm like, I bet they're going to tie the game, and we're going to be talking about that save the next day and on the post game show. And we were, because that was a crucial 10 bell stop. The only high danger opportunity New Jersey had in that third period while Calgary was taking it to them. But it could have been an absolute backbreaker. We've seen it. Like, we saw a couple of those backbreakers last week against Colorado, right, where the Flames had a little bit of momentum and then one goes in on them and it kills all that momentum. That would have been had Mercer found a way to score. And it's not like that was a 4 out of 10 breakaway. Like, not only did he get stopped once, he got stopped twice. Yep. As Wolf stuck with it the entire way. For all the texters that were upset that Wolf was getting the start on Thursday night, well, remember we talked
I know about we it? Talked about it, and I know I had said I wouldn't have been offended either way, but like, I don't know how you would have been upset that your de facto number one is starting a hockey game.
I had a caller on post game on Thursday talking about how we don't, like, you know, if Vladar, like, stop giving Wolf all the credit. If Vladar was in his situation, he'd have the exact same numbers. I'm like, what are we talking about here? Like, what world is this where we're needing to take away credit from Dustin Wolf? The number one reason
is it probably
why
somebody that thinks 6 feet is too small to be a goalie in the NHL? Is that the camp?
I don't know. I really don't know. But I do know that if Wolf doesn't make that stop, they don't win the hockey game.
Exactly.
And I do know that because he made that stop, it just added to the belief I know that it just added to the belief that, hey, this is our game. Let's go do it. So, yeah, that was the tipping point of the third period. And what it did was allow, because the Flames had a little momentum in the backstretch of the second period as well, but then Cotter scores on that, you know, not so well played stretch from Ball and Anderson, and it's 3-1 and the Devils are in control. And I think the Devils felt like they were in control going to the third period. Well, that stop by Wolf was kind of the antithesis of that. And I think instead of killing all momentum, it just added even more to what the Flames are trying to do.
Do you think there might have, I know it's your former goalie, it's your former teammate, but do you think there might have been some belief that if, from a Flames perspective, if we can get one, we can get two or three by this guy? Because here's his last five starts, and it's been well documented, his struggles in returning to fine form coming off injury. 4 goals against, 6 goals against, 3 goals against, 6 goals against, 4 goals against. That had to have been
that
in their mind.
Last night?
That includes last night. Okay. The first one, four goals against, was against Calgary. That had to have been in the back of their mind, like, hey, let's just see what happens if we can get this to 3-2. They continue rolling, as you've said, as we've said. You get that stop from Wolf, then bam, 3-3, 4-3, empty netter, 5-3.
Yeah.
Game over, 2 points. Regulation.
Regulation.
Yep. Didn't have that on my card.
That has not been in their DNA this year, that's for sure. That has not been. But you know what? You need, if you're going to be a playoff team, you need multiple games like that in a year. Because when you're playing 82 games, you're going to trail after 40 minutes of play. When you play 82 games, you're going to have nights where you don't have it for a full 60.
Right.
And you, if you're going to be one of the top 16 when it's all said and done, you have to have multiple nights where you find a way when maybe it didn't look like you were going to. And you know, the best teams, the teams that cruise their way into the playoffs or make the playoffs comfortably, have like 10 or 15 of those nights because they're so good. How many times during Tampa's run of being the team did they close their eyes and kind of cruise and, yeah, you know what? They didn't play a great final 40 minutes of play, but they scored 3 in the first and they won the game 3-2. Like, those things happen. But so if you're the Flames, you're not that type of group. We get that, but you still have to find ways on nights where you don't have it if you're going to be a playoff team. And that's two instances I can think of right off the top of my head where they got points where maybe we didn't see it coming. Night 1 and night 68. And those are 4 points that if they make the playoffs, they're going to be pretty important, because I think they're going to be in. If they're going to be in, it's not going to be by 5 points. Like, it's going to be by one or two. So, you know, if they end up making it in, those 4 points against the Canucks on opening night and the Devils in game 68, those will be two that, you know, you look back on and say, yeah, those were pretty crucial ones to pull out of the fire to be a playoff team this year.
And as I mentioned, the first time this season they've scored 4 in the third period, 1 out of 68, 1.4%. I did the math. Wasn't hard math to do. I'd use a calculator. I'm not going to lie. I didn't use long division. 1.4% of the games this season they've scored 4.
You know, recently I tried to do long division, see if I remembered how to do it.
Like, are you doing,
I tried
68
to do,
divided by 4?
No, like I tried to do something. Like I tried to do, like, I remember that you do like the number.
Remainder.
Like the weird thing. And then
the little house.
Yeah. And I tried to remember like how to do, because I know you do like the plus, the minus. I'm like, I don't remember how to do this.
I'm going to try it in the break.
Zero chance that I would remember again. I tried and I failed. Okay. And then here is maybe the most crucial part of all. Imagine if they don't find a way on Thursday night. Like that, I don't know if it would have been curtains, but those curtains would have started to move a little bit closer to closed because, of course, Vancouver, St. Louis.
Wilsey wanted everybody grumpy. That's what happens. You got to wish well on people.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I said I just want everybody to have fun.
And yeah.
I think we blame Wills on that.
I think so.
And it happened in the most dramatic fashion, too.
Vancouver again, too, right?
Brock Besser with 4 seconds to go. And the
what
Blues
a shot.
And it was. Then the Blues win it in overtime. So St. Louis's run continues. But instead of being 4 points back of the Blues and 3 back of Vancouver, they're 2 back and 1 back. So that could have been a really crucial swing point against the Flames in this playoff race if they lose it. Playoff odds now, a little bit of a shift. at least on one of the sites we use. So Money Puck has the same order, but with slightly differing percentages. After Thursday night and all the teams, I'm taking Utah out of it.
Yeah,
Utah,
you think they're done?
Big win against Edmonton. They needed that. Don't get me wrong.
Four back with the game at hand. That's only two if they cash in.
I just...
Fair enough. I'll leave it be. I just have a special spot for Utah because I keep believing in them.
They're not out of it.
But for the sake of this conversation.
They're not within a game.
Fair enough.
St. Louis, Vancouver, Calgary, all within a game of one another. So Money Puck has St. Louis as the highest playoff odds at 43.1%. They have Vancouver next at 30.4%. But Calgary took about a 7% jump after the win, and they're at 24.2%. So Money Puck has St. Louis, Vancouver, Calgary with the Blues ahead by about 13%. That Hockey Reference has the Blues at about the same. So Money Puck has St. Louis 43.1, St. Louis 42.4% over at Hockey Reference, but they have the other two swap. They've got Calgary at 29.2% and Vancouver at 21.3%. So Money Puck has St. Louis, Vancouver, Calgary with a good chunk of space between each one. Hockey Reference has St. Louis, Calgary, Vancouver with a good chunk of space between the three.
What's hilarious, and stay with me on this, is... on Thursday, March 20th, three different teams held that second wild card spot. They opened with Vancouver in it because Calgary played earlier. Yeah. They jumped into that spot. And then by way of the St. Louis-Vancouver result, St. Louis is now in that spot. But like, man,
I mean, take a look at those points percentages. St. Louis is 550, Calgary and Vancouver are 551. It is as close as you could possibly get.
Vancouver, if they manage to find a way to pull this off, you have to give them full marks because they managed to pull out that 4-3 shootout win against Calgary. They managed to find a point against St. Louis on Thursday night. Like, they are scrapping and clawing their way into sticking around in this conversation to a certain degree. Like, if they lose in regulation to St. Louis and they lose in regulation to Calgary in the past week, this is probably a different conversation that we're having. But not that you want to give them any sort of flowers, but they're finding a way, which to round it around, that's how critical that come from behind win for Calgary was.
Yeah.
It changes the landscape completely if they lose that game in regulation as opposed to winning it in regulation. Not that winning it in overtime or a shootout would have been acceptable as well because you're playing an Eastern Conference team, but the sheer fact that you're leaving New Jersey with 2 points after having a multi-goal deficit heading into the third absolutely changes things for the Flames.
Well, keeps them within a game.
Yeah.
And doesn't have...
otherwise, you wouldn't be reporting their playoff odds like Utah.
I probably still would be. We're still called Flames Talk.
I'll tell you what. I'm just picking on you because you're picking on my Utah guys.
Text line 960-960. Sean says, do the Blues have the best odds because of their easier schedule? Flames have the best point percentage. They don't. They have tied for the best points percentage. Both Vancouver and Calgary are 551 on their points percentage, and St. Louis is 0.01 back at 550. Yes, I believe part of what... so there's a few things that go into... there's a lot of things that go into the reasoning for or the algorithms that the different sites use. Schedule, strength of schedule is definitely one of them. They also use, you know, past 10 games, past 20 games, recent play, full season play. Like, there's a lot of different things that go into it, and both Hockey Reference and Money Puck have different algorithms. Dom at The Athletic, I didn't check his because they don't update it every day, but Dom at The Athletic has a different formula for his playoff projections. Like, everybody uses a different thing, and they're not, by no means am I sitting here saying, well, the Flames have anywhere between a 24.2 and 29.2% chance to make the play. Like, I'm not trying to feed these to you as gospel or that these are the be-all and end-all or black and white numbers. They're not. It's just an interesting thing to keep tracking throughout because the algorithms are there. They've been accurate-ish over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years. So there is interesting to watch. And so I think the reason why St. Louis is favored by most of the models right now is Binnington's goaltending of late, the play under Jim Montgomery, their last 10 to 20 games, and their strength of schedule and the relative ease they have in terms of their opposition down the stretch. Now, let me please remind you that a couple of years ago, the Flames were being lauded as having one of the easiest schedules down the stretch. And
they must have seen Chicago too much.
They dropped some massive points along the way to teams like Chicago a couple of times and more. So an easy schedule on paper does not mean that it's an easy schedule in practice.
No, you still got to go out there and win those games. And you can point to a Chicago, who I believe was eliminated Thursday night, or a San Jose and go, okay, those should be free spaces on the bingo card. At the same time, one, you're playing for nothing. And that might sound backwards in terms of level of competition, but you're absolutely free and clear of any sort of expectation or pressure. But two, you're also playing as an individual for your job next season. You can't tell me that 21 skaters and two goalies from San Jose, for example, are all guaranteed jobs next season. So you're absolutely auditioning, whether it's to return to the Sharks or to find a free agent contract elsewhere. Like, those are somewhat trap games they're called trap games for a reason. You still got to go out there. You still got to collect your 2 points. We saw Calgary a few years ago do exactly the opposite in games that they needed to have.
Now, give the Blues credit. They're collecting points right now, and they've got 12 to go. But you never know how the next 12 are going to go, and they still don't have Colton Parayko, so on and so forth. A couple of things just before we pause and transition into the Daily Flames roundtable, but I won't lie, I would wonder how many Flames fans feel this way. I would wonder behind closed doors how many Flames players would feel this way, but to stick it to Jacob Markstrom not once but twice in a season and to do both of them in the third period. Remember the November 1st game at the Dome where Markstrom made his return. It was 0-0 and about 50 minutes in until the Flames finally made it 1-0 and they'd go on to win that game 3-0 with an empty netter. And on this night, not only were the Devils up after 55 plus minutes, Markey picked up the loss with the lead, and 2 and 1 minute go by him. Now, again, I'm not going to fault Jacob on the, not going to clown the former Flames goalie on the Huberdeau goal, because I don't think there's a goalie in the world that's stopping that, especially when Kovacevic set him up perfectly for the,
on a tee.
Here you go. We're tied now. Why don't you take the lead? But Huberdeau made no mistake. That was bar down before you could blink. And good on him for his 26th. But like, I would imagine that there's some people who had a bit of smile on their face watching Jacob Markstrom slamming his stick on the boards while he was off with the extra attacker on. Like, this is a guy that didn't want to be here. And you're talking to a huge Jacob fan. I was a massive... people got so frustrated at me because of how much I would defend Jacob Markstrom during his tenure here. And I have no problem with that. I still think he was a great member of the Flames. But he decided he didn't want to be here anymore. He decided that he would like to be elsewhere. He essentially told the Flames that I've played my last game here and not forced them, but put them in a spot where, you know, it was in everybody's best interest to move them. There was really only the one team. And now they've beat him heads up in both games they've played. Dan Vladar beat him the first time. Dustin Wolf beat him the second time. I would imagine that for the six guys who decided they want to be here, I would imagine that feels just a little bit sweeter. Again, they won't say it publicly, especially right now, because they're all business saying we got to go win against the Islanders on Saturday. But you can't convince me that they weren't fist pumping just a little extra when they beat Jacob Markstrom the way they did on Thursday night.
Like, if they feel 100% excited about that win, probably bump that to 105 because it's Jacob Markstrom. Yeah. If it's Jake Allen, it's 100%. If it's Jacob Markstrom, maybe it's 105. And please don't text in and be like, you can't be more than 100% on anything.
Yeah, you can. Because
you certainly can.
Because the Flames gave it 110%. Yeah, exactly.
Little bit sweeter when you do it against a former teammate. Probably even more so because of the reasons you outlined, where probably in everybody's best interest that Jacob Markstrom isn't a member of the Flames this season.
What would you do when it comes to your goaltending choice to wrap up the road trip? Do you go Wolf or do you go Vladar against the New York Islanders?
I go Vladar so that my 3-1 prediction is accurate. Wolf.
I was gonna say, that would
I go Wolf to make sure that my 3-1 prediction is. I just go back to Wolf. Like, he was absolutely stellar. Two of the three goals that beat him were in off the Flames, were in off teammates. The wraparound by Heischer goes off of Klapka's stick. Ball gets a shot redirected off him on Halla's goal.
Halla's shot was going about 8 feet wide.
Yeah, So, I mean,
there's this one guy on the text line who's like, why aren't you guys calling out Wolf's bad goals? I'm like, what
which one?
Bad goals? What are you talking about?
The one, the shot that I won't say it was going 8 feet wide, but it was very clearly going wide.
Can you let
and
me
it
have
bounce
my 8 feet
in.
Wide?
I didn't have a tape measure, so I can't attest to how accurate your measurements are. And then, again, the first one goes off a Klapka stick on a wraparound and pops in.
I am pretty sure that that person
What
is...
about... Was that person serious? Because he also stopped three breakaways
I'm
that
pretty
game.
I'm pretty sure he's an Oilers fan. I'm pretty certain he's just a troll, so maybe I shouldn't give him...
So one beats him cleanly and he stops three breakaways. I don't, unless there's...
Well, and the one that beat him cleanly was a bad bounce and maybe a little bit too aggressive a play by Ball. And then
it was poorly
defended. Anderson passively just let it happen too. So, yeah, it was poorly defended and a great finish from Cotter too.
Unless there's something that the Flames have in their metrics about Wolf is at X percent and they feel more comfortable with Vladar once it's over that X percent, I go right back to Wolf. He's done nothing to come out of the net.
I agree on that front, but I also think this is a lot of hockey, and I wouldn't...
They've got 2 days off before Seattle
that,
on Thursday, on Tuesday.
I don't care. I just...
Pat doesn't care about me. You heard it here first. Hurts
I just,
my heart.
I would consider heavily going to Vladar just because it is a quick turnaround. You're right. They have the 2 days, and I do care.
Thank you. That's all I wanted. I was really just fishing for that.
They do have the Sunday, Monday off before they play on Tuesday.
So that'd be 4 days
Seattle.
Off for Wolf, basically.
It's one of those situations where if they were to go to Vladar, I'd have no problem with it. And if I would be like 52-48 going to Vladar. It would have been more had they not won that game.
Yeah.
It would have been more had Wolf not been spectacular, but he was so good that it pushes it pretty close. But I'm just barely on the, go Vladar in the afternoon game and then get ready to go heavy dose of Wolf on the homestand.
If that was a 7 p.m. local start and not a noon local start, would you change your mind? Like, does that factor in the,
yes,
the
it
start
does.
Time?
Yep, it does.
I'm okay going Wolf on the short sort of notice. If you really feel like after that game, you're testing his energy levels, you can go Vladar against Seattle. And even then, that would give you 4 days off before Wolf jumps back in against Dallas on Thursday.
It is Steinberg and Vickers. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Okay, and it is time for our final Daily Flames Roundtable of the week. It's a Friday, and our Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Friday Daily Flames Roundtable. And guys, earlier this week, we were talking about something, and I had brought this up. And, you know, somebody on the text line had pointed this out to me. I want to say maybe it was late last week or early this week. I don't remember. But somebody had pointed this out on the text line to me about the season Jonathan Huberdeau is having. And with him picking up another 2 points on Thursday night in New Jersey, scoring the game-winning goal with less than 4 minutes to go, I was like, you know, this is a good time to bring this out and discuss it a little bit more. I wish I knew who it was who texted this in and who to give credit to, but this is not my idea. I just went and did the latest math. But Jonathan Huberdeau this year has been in on 29.2% of Calgary's offense this year with his 52 points. And if you look back to his career year of 21-22 with the Florida Panthers, he was in on 33.8% of Florida's offense that year. So it's a little more than a 4% swing, but a pretty small gap in terms of how much he's almost at 30%. He was just over 30% that year. You know, and those are two very different teams. And I think that's why the percentage number is so important. The Flames are a low scoring team that is trying to win low scoring games. The Panthers were the number one offense in the NHL that year, averaging more than 4 goals a game, and were actually pretty good defensively too. They were the number 12 team in goals against that year, but they could run up the score on anybody because that offense was capable of scoring at will sometimes, at least in the regular season. Long story short, with such a small gap in terms of how much offense Jonathan Huberdeau has been in on this year, his third year with the Flames, and that year, his last year with the Panthers. Guys, what does that tell us about just how important he's been to the group this year?
Be honest, Pat, I mean, it's a hard question for me to answer. Just because, as you pointed out, the two teams are so different. So that Panthers team tried to win 6-5 every night. This Flames team is trying to win 2-1 every night. So, you know, it's hard for me to, I guess, answer the question based on just those percentages. But I've got some other counting stats that I think tell a pretty important story when it comes to how good Jonathan Huberdeau has been this season. So he leads the team in goals with 26. He leads the team in points with 52. He leads the team in power play goals with 9. He's tied for the team lead in power play points with 19. He leads the team in game-winning goals with 6, which is twice as many as any other player has. And he leads all forwards in average time on ice at 19 minutes and 16 seconds. So he leads the team in almost everything is what I'm trying to get at. And the other thing that has really impressed me about Jonathan Huberdeau in his evolution is I think he used to be, during his time with the Panthers, more of a perimeter player. But when you look at where he scored his goals from this season, and as mentioned, he's got 26 of them and leads the team, he has scored 4 from literally right inside of the blue paint. He has scored 12 from between the circles right in front of the net. He has scored another 3 from the bottom of the circles beside the net. He has scored 4 from the high slot, actually 6 from the high slot, and 1 that was probably an empty netter from outside of the blue line. So for me, he has played to the identity that the Flames have tried to build this season. Ryan Husk has talked so much about the importance of getting pucks to the net and getting bodies to the net. And Jonathan Huberdeau has done a better job getting his body to the net than any player on this team, and he's been rewarded for it. I had a chat with him this morning, and that's exactly what he said to me, is it's, you know, not always easy to get to the front of your opponent's net. They don't want you there, but he's a big, strong guy. He's done a great job getting there and paying the price to stay there, and he's been rewarded, and the Flames have been rewarded because he's gone there. So, you know, he scores arguably the biggest goal so far this season for his team, and that incredible comeback in Newark, New Jersey, that thrilling 5-3 victory over the Devils, a game the Flames trailed 3-1 following 40 minutes, and it was the first time all season the Devils didn't win when leading through 2 periods of play, and I think, for me, the most miraculous comeback so far this season for the Flames. So the fact that he scored the game-winning goal in that contest last night, I think fitting, because he has just done so much for this team in so many ways this season.
Well, and full marks for him, too. And we don't need to delve too much into his first 2 seasons with the Flames, but it was pretty disastrous from an expectation standpoint, especially when you consider it was the largest year-over-year point drop in NHL history from his last season in Florida to his first season in Calgary. But now he's flirting with 30 goals for the third time in his career. He's on pace for 62 points, too, which is a 10-point rebound over last season. That's nearly a 20% increase in production. And I get it. He's not a point-per-game player. We're not sitting here, you know, raving about a 62-point season necessarily. But he's at 52 points right now, which literally matches last season's total with games remaining. And a 20% increase is better than another 10% drop, which we saw year 1 to year 2 for Calgary. And who wouldn't take 14 more goals year-to-date on a Calgary Flames team that is last in scoring, last in production, last in generating offense? So the fact that he was able to take his first 2 seasons in Calgary, modify his game appropriately, and Willsie, you're right, it's tailor-made for what the Flames are this year in terms of how they need to generate their offense and parking it in and around that blue paint and being a lot more direct and being more north-south as opposed to east-west, which he's been in the past. It's progress, and that's exactly what you need. It's resulted in Calgary's most productive player this year.
I mean, guys, I think that stat of the percentage actually says quite a lot. I think you can very, very easily make the argument that Huberdeau has been as important to the Flames this season as he was to the Panthers in his final year there. And like that to me tells a lot. Like, Was he not in Hart Trophy? Was he not a Hart Trophy finalist that year? When he had 115 points and he like, I don't know. There's a few guys on this team this year that you're like, where would they be without him? And Huberdeau is one of them. And so like that percentage says a lot to me. And I think that it's a really good indication of how far things have come in that the lowest scoring year the Flames have had in ages, Huberdeau has been the guy who has, you know, really been able to be a positive on it after 2 years of being a, you know, more net negative player when we're talking about him. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, we all agree that Dustin Wolf is the MVP of this team. And I think it would be hard to argue against him. But when I think of where the Flames would be without Huberdeau and the goals he scored, the timeliness of them. And I know Nazem Kadri's been very important too, but I think of what Huberdeau's done on the penalty kill, what Huberdeau's done on the power play, the way that he has changed his game up a little bit so he is not a defensive liability the same way he has been in the past and how much of a concerted effort that he's made. Like, I don't know. I think that, you know, those numbers, those percentages being as close as they are from the career year that earned him $10.5 million a season to where he is now, guys, I think it tells you that he's just as important to this Flames group as he was to that Panthers team. And that's saying something because Huberdeau was pretty important to that Panthers team that won the President's Trophy that year.
He might be more important to this Flames team than he was to that Panthers team because they didn't have a hard time scoring. This Flames team does.
They were definitely a deeper group for sure.
Yeah, and they played a lot different style of hockey. And I give Jonathan Huberdeau a lot of credit because he's evolved as a player. You know, he's way better without the puck than he used to be. He's way better defensively. He's being used in the penalty kill. Of course, he's a huge part of the Flames power play. He's had just a fantastic season. And he'll never be a 115-point guy again. And I think he'd be the first player or the first person to tell you that. But that's okay because he's had a huge impact on helping the Flames get to where they are. And that's in a pretty good spot when it comes to fighting for that second wildcard spot in the Western Conference. And if I had to fill out a ballot for Calgary Flames' most valuable player, and there were only three spots on the ballot, I would really struggle. So Dustin Wolf is number one for sure. But then picking two out of these three players would be really hard for me. Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri for sure. And then Mackenzie Weegar. I'm not sure we've talked enough about how good Mackenzie Weegar has been this season. And it goes way beyond the fact that he leads the team in points by defenseman and is actually tied with Jonathan Huberdeau for the team lead in power play points. Like, he leads the league in a number of defensive metrics, including total defensive plays. Like, he has been brilliant for the Flames on the blue line. I think by far their best defenseman this season. So the fact that we're talking about two of the guys that the Flames got from the Panthers and that Matthew Tkachuk trade and how impactful they've been in helping the Flames have success this season. I know it's a trade that many wouldn't make again, but the Flames didn't have much of a choice. And, hey, they got some pretty good players back and a first-round pick as well.
Weegar also number 17 overall in the NHL among skaters in wins above replacement. By far, yeah. Calgary's most important guy by that metric. Number one, by the way, is Leon Draisaitl in that comparable. So, you know, and that's just a lot of different metrics that you can give credence to here or there and all that type of stuff. But I know how big WAR has become. It's a gospel stat now in baseball. It's not there yet in hockey. It's getting there. And I think eventually there'll be a couple of WAR metrics that are looked at that way. But Evolving Hockey has him at 2.7 wins above replacement, which is actually tied for 14th overall with guys like Eichel, Hagel, and MacKinnon this year. So he's been a pretty important player for the Flames. Weegar has been as well. Okay,
I stole this from the Sportsnet broadcast last night. Since January 1, he's first in time on ice for the Flames, second in points, first in power play points, first in blocks, and second in hits, just to put into perspective his game over the course of the last 2.5 months.
Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wells, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Friday. And so this road trip wraps up now against the New York Islanders on Saturday afternoon. Guys, what should we expect from the opposition? What type of game should we expect the Islanders to bring to the table?
Well, talking to some Flames coaches and players at practice today, they see some similarities between themselves and the Islanders. You know, both teams are really hardworking, struggle to score, and are fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot in their respective conference. So, you know, the Flames, if you take a look at the standings, currently sit 2 points behind the Blues for the second wildcard spot in the Western Conference. And then if you scroll down, you'll see that the Islanders currently sit 2 points behind the Canadiens for the second wildcard spot in the Eastern Conference. So tomorrow afternoon's game is going to be a big one for both the Flames and for the Islanders. And the Islanders are playing some pretty good hockey right now. They've won three in a row. They're 6-3-1 in their last 10. They've been a better home team than a road team. Normally, I wouldn't say this. Normally, I want the Flames to play as much five-on-five hockey as possible. But one area where they actually do have an advantage on the Islanders, even though their penalty kill has struggled for most of the season, their power play has been pretty good and has certainly scored some timely goals for them. But the Islanders are the worst special teams team in the NHL. So we'll see if the Flames can maybe take advantage of their terrible power play and penalty kill in tomorrow afternoon's game at UBS Arena. But it's not going to be an easy one to win. There's a lot on the line for both teams. Both the Flames and the Islanders are playing some desperate hockey right now. So I think it's going to be an absolute battle at UBS if the Flames want to come back to Calgary with three wins and six of a possible 8 points on this four-game road trip. They're going to have to probably, as Dustin Wolf would say, work their nuts off tomorrow.
For me, they should be seeing a desperate opponent. The New York Rangers have me a little gun shy in declaring that that's actually what will happen, because they were supposed to be a desperate team too and laid an absolute egg. But as you mentioned, Wilsey, the Islanders are 2 points back of Montreal with even games. So they should be just as fired up as the Flames in terms of what a game means and what 2 points means in the chase for the second wild card spot. And they're still a team that's on a three-game winning streak, points in four straight. Calgary will see their backup in Marcus Hoberg. Sorokin started five straight. He won't play against the Flames. But Hoberg has a 170 goals against and a 938 save percentage. Only 8 games this season for a small sample size, but really strong numbers when he's been in the net. Again, this should, in theory, be two desperate teams going at it with, and not to be super dramatic about their playoff fates hanging in the balance, because there still is 14 games to go. But this is two teams that certainly have a lot to play for at this point in the season.
Islanders 2.72 goals per game, tied for 24th in the NHL. Flames 2.57, 31st in the NHL. They did rise out of the basement after scoring 5 against the Devils on Thursday night. But yeah, I mean, these are two teams that are offensively challenged. Now, one team decided to kind of move off at least one important player in Brock Nelson, and the Islanders have seemed to be able to withstand that. They've gotten very good goaltending this year, which is another similarity to the way the Flames play, and I think that's an important thing to point out, that with Hogberg and Sorokin, they've gotten very good goaltending this year. The Islanders are, 7th overall in team save percentage at 5-on-5. The Flames are 3rd overall in 5-on-5 team save percentage. So you got two of the better goaltending teams in the NHL, which I think will be an interesting matchup to watch. And yeah, I think just two teams that play a very similar style of hockey, very structure oriented, and it's all about details and hard work and limiting the opposition, and doesn't leave a ton of room for offensive creativity. So yeah, I think it's going to be a hard fought one. And I guess what I would say, guys, is I would expect this to be kind of to what Vix was talking about. I would expect this to be what I thought the Rangers game on Tuesday was going to be. I thought the Rangers game on Tuesday was going to have that kind of like, whoa, two desperate teams, so much on the line. You know, we're going to get a real hard fought in the mud type of game. Instead, it really wasn't. One team came to play and the other team just got dressed. So we'll see what the Islanders bring to the table. But I certainly expect the Flames to play a pretty urgent brand of hockey, and I would expect the Islanders to as well. And if that's the case, I would imagine a game that's right there in the balance going to the third period once again.
Yeah, and maybe the Flames can win the battle between the pipes with the Islanders going with their backup. As far as the Flames goaltender goes, we don't know who is going to start the finale of this four-game road trip, but I can tell you, and maybe you guys have already talked about it, that it was, I wouldn't call it an optional practice today. There were a handful of guys that didn't skate, probably just dealing with some bumps and bruises or maybe a little bit of fatigue. But I did think it was interesting that Dustin Wolf was one of the players who was not on the ice at UBS Arena. Don't panic. I don't think it's an injury or anything like that, but he's played a lot of hockey. He's probably going to play a lot of hockey down the stretch. They had some guy wearing a mask out there at the opposite end from Dan Vladar. So I do wonder if that suggests that Dustin Wolf will get the start versus the Islanders tomorrow afternoon. And another big game for the Flames. We'll see.
Of all the guys that didn't skate, the Flames said Wolf, Uyghur, Coleman, and Pospisil all missed practice for maintenance. So don't have to worry about any of that. But yeah, I'm curious to see who leads him out for warm-up at about 1:30 on Saturday afternoon. And I wouldn't be surprised either way. Vix and I talked about it before you came on in terms of where we'd go. I'm like 52% I'd go Vladar. He's very much on the Wolf side so that he could say that there will be one goalie who goes 3-1. I'm like 52% I'd go Vladar, but I don't think you can go wrong with your choice against the Islanders because Wolf played so well
against
New Jersey. Yeah, and if they did, I'm not going to sit here and be like, how would they go Wolf? This is ridiculous. I just, you know.
Yeah, same for me.
Vladar played well against Toronto. It's not a full 48-hour turnaround. That's what's got me like very slightly going Vladar, but and really, it's 6-1, half a dozen and the other. I think you can go. I think you're probably making the right choice either way. Okay, Wilsey, we will do this again on Monday, and we'll talk to you on pregame on Saturday. Thanks so much, as always.
Sounds good. Have a good weekend, everybody.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Cam and Taylor, our outstanding producers. And that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why in minutes from the Calgary Airport.
This is Flames Talk.
And that will wrap us up on the program on this Friday afternoon. Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. Taylor Dingman, Cam Hughes have been our outstanding producers. The Eric Francis Hour is coming up next with lots to dive into. Afternoon game against the Islanders. You never know how those are going to go for, you know, these Western,
can be a little wonky.
These Western Canadian teams and playing the afternoon games. It's a little different. I'm hoping that it's a, you know, hard-fought, good hockey game. But I think the Flames are in a good spot to come home with 3 of a possible 4 wins and 6 of a possible 8 points.
Well, when we met earlier in the week to kick things off, we were kicking around what would be a successful road trip. 6 of 8 would certainly have the Flames coming back in a very good spot.
Yep. And that was what kind of my mark of making it a successful road trip was 5-6 points, and they've got a chance to do that. It is a 2:00 face-off Calgary time, which means we got your Calgary Flames warm-up at 1:00 on Saturday afternoon. Happy Friday, Vix.
Friday night, I'm thinking that we just might fly away to someplace they don't know who we are. Now I'm riding shotgun in your car. We drive through the city like explorers going 65. Blowing hair flying across your face. We left on Friday, now it's Saturday. Pressed jeans buttoned up, jeans iron slipping up. Red shoes walking slow, headphones flaring 3 stacks. Sunglasses flaring out, thick watch hanging low. Studded belt pulled taut. 3 stacks on the radio. Friday night, I'm thinking that we just might run away to some place. We can be who we are. We can be who we are. I love you, Mom.
You know, I watched about, just because I was, I watched about three episodes.
Just because.
Last night, just because I was like doing a couple things and. What the hell?
Great way to end the week right there. Thank you, bud.
Bye, buddy. Aaron.